The Good Neighbor Network. FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro. FM 100.5 Smyrna. And online at WGNSradio.com.
What is up? Welcome to One Show, giving you the truth about personal finance. This is Financial Coaching Radio, and I'm your host, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner, one of the only independent commission-free financial advisors in Rutherford County. For all about me, check out Jason Qualls, CFP.com. That's J-A-S-O-N-Q-U-A-L-L-S, CFP.com. If you want to be a part of the show, click email the show at financialcoachingradio.com. 2025 is approaching upon us. It's here, basically. Tax deduction change for those over 65. Let's find out together what new part of the tax code we got to deal with in 2025. The IRS has announced inflation adjustments to several important credit and deduction amounts set to take effect in 2025. This includes, but not limited to, the new 2025 income tax brackets and increases to the standard deduction and the additional standard deduction for those of older than 65. And if you didn't know, you get more of a standard deduction if you're beyond the age of 65. Pretty good perk there. The extra standard deduction, which is claimed on top of the regular one, can help reduce taxable income. For single filers, let's see, it went from just about $2,000 more. For married, let's see, it's got a little increase. What, is that right? That's a small increase. So you're probably aware of this, Doug. This is one of those clickbait articles. I was thinking, oh, there's some major change for those over 65. But it's just that little increase in the standard deduction. And if you don't know as well, you know, the tax brackets adjust with inflation. The standard deductions adjust for inflation. Most of everything that has a dollar value affixed to it in the tax code, it gets revised up every year having to deal with inflation. And this is no different. If you're age 65 or older, you get a higher standard deduction than those under age 65. So that's always can help out. More standard deduction, the better. And just what that means, you know, there's itemizing deductions and there's the standard deduction. Itemizing deductions like medical cost, over 10% of your adjusted gross income, interest, home interest, taxes being sales taxes in the state of Tennessee. So we pay a pretty good whop. Real estate taxes. What else is on the standard deduction? That's really the main ones that, you know, so it's an itemized list. When I say standard deduction, I misspoke. On the itemized deduction list. So there's a sheet there. If you, it's very tough for people to itemize today because you got to have a substantial amount of itemized deductions because the standard deduction is what? It's like $26,000 for a married couple now, something like that. And even more for over the age of 65. But just the standard deduction means that's what comes off of your income that you do not owe tax on. So you don't pay tax on every dollar you earn. You only pay tax potentially on the dollars over and above the itemized or standard deduction amount. And that would be it. So when we're talking about tax planning, income tax planning, you know, the way to think of it is, I'm not going to pull up the exact itemized or standard deduction amount because it's irrelevant. Let's call it $26,000. That means the first $26,000 that you earn, this is married, filing jointly, no tax. And then there's the next part of income that you earn that you could pay 0% tax on. So if you finagle this with other income sources, standard deduction, taxable income sources, up to a low amount plus Roth plus Social Security, you could have a pretty good monthly income flow. And as a result, pay very little, if any, federal income taxes. This is all part of planning. Planning. Next up on the to-do list for us today, this is an article as well. We'll learn as we go. Let's see if it has any merit to something we can use. What could be the problem with 401k catch-up contributions. What a 401k catch-up contribution is, if you're over the age of 50, you can put in more money than those under age 50. Rule changes governing certain Roth 401k contributions cause confusion and raise concern. Shocker that we have parts of the tax code causing confusion. The Secure 2.0 Act have substantially changed retirement account rules. Some of these changes have already taken effect. This has been problematic for some older adults who need clarity on crucial retirement planning aspects like taking RMDs. Another concern involving upcoming changes to catch-up contribution rules for 401k plans, these changes will eventually require catch-up contributions for high-income earners to be made on a Roth basis. So there's the kicker there. If you make too much money, in the government's eyes, you can't get a larger tax deduction. You have to pay tax first. Making catch-up contributions on an after-tax Roth basis, meaning paying taxes on your retirement savings during the years when you usually earn more. On the other hand, traditional 401k accounts allow for you to defer taxes until retirement, which can be advantageous if you anticipate being in a lower tax bracket by then. So here are the changes. If you're at least 50 years old and earned $145,000 or more in the previous year, you can make catch-up contributions to your employer-sponsored plan. But there's a catch. You could only make those contributions on a Roth basis. So there you go. This is news to me. News flash. We get that news flash little beeping signal. It may have always been there. Having taken part, this may be something that goes into effect just next year. But it's good to know. If you make more than $145,000, I'm sure that's taxable income. If you made it last year, your catch-up contribution to your employer-sponsored retirement plan has to go in on a Roth basis. You have to pay tax on it. No more larger deduction. Now, you can do the regular contribution to your 401k plan tax-free, but anything above that, if you make more than $145,000, is going to have to go in after taxes into the Roth contribution. You won't be able to get a tax deduction for those catch-up contributions. The Secure 2.0 Roth catch-up contribution rule won't apply to taxpayers making $145,000 or less. What's the problem? It's always a problem, right? Well, the problem seems to be, is this fair? No. The problem is, it's just one more thing we got to deal with. You know, not that these things don't generate tax revenue, because that's what they're for, but is there not something more we can be doing besides monkeying with these 401k plans and Roth IRAs and whatever, the other 40 different types of retirement plans we have that make our lives more complicated? Is there not another way to generate tax revenue without putting the complexity back on us? It doesn't appear they don't really care about that issue. All right, this is Financial Coaching Radio. After this short break, we'll talk estate planning with John Baker, estate planning attorney. Keep it locked in right here on Financial Coaching Radio.
It was a night. Ooh, what a night it was. It really was such a night. The moon was bright. Oh, how bright it was. It really was such a night. The night was alive with stars above.
Is stressful, and so is shopping for a mortgage. Take my advice and get a second opinion on the mortgage for your new home or your refinance. Not all banks and mortgage companies are created equal. Trust me on this. Call my friend Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885. great team, great process, and the best rates. Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885.
Would you trust your doctor or surgeon if they had never been to medical school? Of course not. So why trust your financial future to a financial advisor with little training or education? Anyone can call themselves a financial planner or a financial advisor, but a certified financial planner has been extensively trained. My name is Jason Qualls, and I am one of just a few certified financial planners in this area. So ask your current advisor about their education and training. Then call me, Jason Qualls, certified financial planner at 878-2134, or go to jasonquallscfp.com.
I had to fall in love. It was a kiss. Ooh, what a kiss it was. It really was such a kiss.
Oh, how she could kiss. Oh, what a kiss it was. It really was such a kiss.
Just a welcome back to the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio with you every Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock right here on WGNS. Here to talk estate planning is John Baker, estate planning attorney, BakerCounsel.com. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be here.
First up for my questions for you is, in leaving an inheritance to a child, and in this case an adult child, but not their spouse. I've heard that mentioned several times over the last couple of decades that I've been in this business. They're like, I want to leave it to my child, but I don't really want it to go to their husband, their wife. What provokes that, do you think, and why is that top of mind for people wanting to pass assets down to the generation in your personal practice experience?
Yeah, I think that is the typical sentiment, is to pass it down to your descendants or your bloodline. And while, you know, there may be spouses, you know, with your children and grandchildren and whatnot, people do tend to keep the inheritances, you know, within that, you know, within their descendants or their, you know, their bloodline there. And they don't typically deviate to spouses, though sometimes they do. But if they deviate out to spouses or want to include the spouses in the estate plans, then I just think it's important to go over all the pros and cons of that. You know, thinking about, well, you know, what if there was a divorce or the spouse died, or how do we make sure to protect the grandchildren in case the surviving spouse remarries? You know, there's all kind of issues.
Well, that would be, I've never heard that mentioned that way, but yes, if you leave it to, let's say, your living son, and then he passes away, and then everything goes to his wife, then it could change a great deal with that money eventually ending up in the bloodline of the grandchildren.
Right.
And, you know, that's trust planning, right? There's really no way around.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, that would certainly be a safer way to do it, because, you know, you could have, you know, certain parameters with it, and you could have the grandchildren as the remainder beneficiary after the spouse. But yeah, you do have to think it through carefully, and maybe because of all those reasons, that's why people do tend to typically keep it within their own family bloodline and not deviate out to the spouses.
Can planning, I won't say it's complex, but it's detailed. Can this detailed type planning be accomplished in a will, or does it need a standalone trust?
Oh, no, you could do it in a will. You know, you could do it either way.
So it's not adding more complexity to the documents, it's just being more thorough in the documents that you do have.
Yeah, whether you're creating this and, you know, planning in a will or in a standalone trust, it's all in the details, regardless of which one you're actually using.
Is there been any new changes to estate planning laws? I know the IRS has finally issued guidance on this inherited IRA 10-year rule and whether to take annual distributions, and of what I've read, I've always done it differently because I've always accelerated the distributions just in case. I didn't want to take too little or wait on whatever the right rule the IRS is going to see or say. But now it's if the required minimum distribution was being taken before the person passed away, it's a non-spouse, you got to continue annual distributions.
So here, what was it in June or earlier this year, they issued regulations and, you know, and clarified some of those things, you know, which is good. You know, clarity on those rules is always good. And
well, it took them like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, but IRAs, retirement accounts, you know, that's the asset that you have to specifically think about because of the taxation rules. You know, they're different than your house or your regular bank account or just your basic, you know, general investment account that's in your own name. When it's in the IRA, you got all the tax rules because, you know, it's going to have tax deferred funds in the account. And so, you know, your the inherited IRAs, the beneficiary is going to have to pay that tax, and they have to follow those rules.
And it's a 10-year rule, right?
So yeah, that's going to be
a little
general
minimum distribution, yeah, that you may have to take if you're, if someone was already, say, 75, taking a distribution, they passed away, left the IRA to a non-spouse. You got to take a small annual distribution, but you got to get it all out within 10 years.
Yeah, you know, there's some exceptions to that 10-year rule, but yes, that's going to be the time frame for most inherited IRA beneficiaries.
Has this been something that's been discussed in your office? Obviously, the making sure that you plan properly for it, but what are people doing? What I'm doing is basically taking 1/10 of the account every year because it's got to come out at some point. But I've never had a discussion what other professionals are doing in this realm. Yeah. Are they just waiting and waiting and waiting? Maybe the rules will change again.
Well, I tell you, on that end of it, I don't get real deep in that with the clients. I'm usually on the front end when we're planning and naming the beneficiaries and maybe in getting the distribution initially out, you know, when the person dies. But I do mention it to them. And usually what I do is I'll tell them you need to talk about that, you know, with your financial advisor and your tax advisors, you know, who are managing those things, and they can look at the numbers for you and decide, you know, what's going to be best in your situation. So I tend to kind of defer that issue over to the tax planners and the financial planners to let them take a close look at it. But, you know, there is the risk, you know, you don't want to typically, if it's a large IRA, you don't want to wait to the last year and typically pay all the tax in 1 year when you've had 10 years to spread it out over multiple tax years.
But in hindsight, that could be the wrong thing to do because they could always change the laws again.
Yeah, and then you know, I guess you get into issues of how they might apply in a retroactive, you know, setting. But
inheriting IRAs has always been, you know, it's, I won't say confusing, but it's just got a lot of nuances to it, and this change has made it more.
Does.
You know, it's just like, well, the old way was fine.
And I was actually telling a client the other day, just in a general estate planning meeting, and we were going over assets. I was telling him, I said, there are attorneys and there are CPAs that specialize in this. You know, a predominant part of their practice is simply analyzing these IRA inheritance issues. It's the special asset. Even when I get into, let's say, Medicaid planning, you know, I got someone going in a nursing home. You know, we've got it. The IRA is always...
That always causes the problem, right?
It always causes the problem, yeah. I mean, they're nice to have, you know, right. And the more, the better, you know. But they do have some complicated rules when you get into certain things like the taxation or you know, Medicaid planning, so...
If you're just joining in, we're talking estate planning with John Baker, estate planning attorney, BakerCounsel.com. John, a question I don't know if we've ever discussed on this show, and I'm sure it's more and more prevalent today, but maybe not. I'm not sure what the marital demographics are in this world, but couples that have big age gaps, do they have different estate planning issues, you think? Is that something that's, if someone comes in and they're 60 and they're married to a 25-year-old or a 70-year-old with a 30-year-old, or do they have certain issues they're running into planning-wise that a normal close in age couple would not have?
Well, I tell you, I haven't had one like that recently.
Other than you thinking, well, what's this really about?
Well, some of the issues, you know, aside from any just, you know, financial or tax matters that may be, you know, going on, is the children. You know, do we have children from a prior marriage with the older spouse? Does he have
that's a great point. Let's say there's
a newborn child with the new spouse.
That was where I was going with it. Say there's the husband has children from the previous marriage, the wife does not, but they share a child together.
I can't even remember who it was now, but it was some celebrity. I was looking at, the, you know, just stumbled across an article the other day. I think it was
this weekend.
80-something years old. Oh. He had a 4-year-old child or something. So
probably Mick Jagger.
Yeah, it was one of the, it was probably a rock and roll roller. I don't remember, but the but these younger spouse cases are out there, and I do think they present some unique issues, particularly as it's going to relate to children from older children from a prior relation and. Perhaps, other children or new
children.
Yeah,
the biggest thing I think, obviously, would be the contestability of it. The older children, when they say, why is he giving her so much money? They're only married 2 or 3 years, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And then there's the squabbling after someone's passing.
What's that? What is it, the Murdoch guy? And he's.
Are they fighting over some money?
Well, and he's like 90-something years old. And he did he recently get remarried or
after the one went to jail? I kind of stopped keeping up with it.
Yeah, I don't remember, but the what was there was a famous case years ago. I can't remember the lady's name now, but she had been kind of a pop celebrity and was married to this older wealthy gentleman. I think they lived in Texas. I just can't remember the name at the moment, but there was a lot of litigation with that case, I believe, after he died. And so it can. And so, if you're going down that path, you want to be sure.
And if you have no planning, I could see that as being, what is the rule for dying without a will in Tennessee and marry? Is it 10 years? If you've married at least 10 years, your spouse is entitled to what, 50%? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I believe it's 40%, but the.
And that's mandatory by the state.
Yeah, well, it's an election against a will. And that 40%, there's kind of a complicated way you compute that. But yes, if you die without a will, your spouse has certain entitlements, and or if the spouse elects against the will.
Well, yeah. On that note, let's say that the husband that passed away created a estate plan where the surviving spouse, and in this case, maybe young children or no children, that he just disinherited them or gave them married less than the 40%. Is that an issue? Do you have to give at least what the state says, or can you do anything you want in your own document?
Well, you could do what you want in your own document, but that spouse could elect against the document and take that statutory amount, which might be the 40%.
And is that going to be awarded in that scenario?
It could be. Every case has got its own unique spins to it, but I think just from a general perspective, yes, if the spouse...
And it may not be something that's malicious or intentional.
Right.
It could just be the will just didn't get updated. And
right.
the new spouse wasn't included in that.
So the, if you have a remarriage situation, that just kind of emphasizes the point. Be sure to evaluate that and update your planning, to account
beneficiaries, documents, titles of assets, all that stuff.
So it's marriage, just like birth or death is one of those big life events where you need to review your estate planning. So.
This is Financial Coaching Radio. Be sure to stick around right after this short break. We'll continue this conversation with John Baker, estate planning attorney. I'm Jason Qualls, certified financial planner. We're back right after this.
Recent undercover study found that over 89% of paid tax preparers made mistakes. You heard me right, over 89%. Is your tax person making mistakes? Tax mistakes cost you money and may even lead to an IRS audit. I recommend you get a second opinion on your tax return today by calling Tutherell Helen Welch CPAs at 848-1072. Tutherell Helen Welch has been providing tax services to individuals and businesses for over 50 years. So call them today at 848-1072 or go to thwcpa.com. Get a second opinion. Get a second opinion. Get a second opinion. I'm Jason Qualls, commission-free certified financial planner. I can't stress enough how important it is for you to get a second opinion on your investments and financial plan. Unfortunately, since most financial advisors care more about selling you financial products than providing objective advice, it can be hard for you to know who has your best interest in mind. Call me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner for a free no-obligation investment review at 878-2134 or go to my website, jasonqualls.com. CFP.com. You have worked your entire life for what you have, and you deserve to determine how your assets are passed on to your loved ones. Make sure your estate plan is in order by calling John Baker, estate planning attorney, today at 896-5621. Estate planning is not about you, but those you leave behind. For more, go to BakerCounsel.com or call 896-5621.
Welcome back to Financial Coaching Radio, the one show giving you the truth about personal finance. I'm Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner. Jason Qualls, CFP.com for all about me. Still in the house to talk estate planning is John Baker, attorney. BakerCounsel.com is the web address for more questions and info about his practice. BakerCounsel.com. John, what is the interest overall in someone's estate planning for charitable giving? And what is the traditional tool? Are they using their documents to facilitate charitable planning? Or are they creating special documents? Or are they using life insurance? What is the most common thing?
If you're talking the average person out there that wants to, you know, give to their church or to their favorite charity, they're probably putting that in their will, or if they have the trust, they might, you know, put that in their trust. I always have them look at their retirement accounts, because if they name the charity as beneficiary of the retirement account, that's a way to get money to a non-taxable entity and get that income in the retirement account over to the charity.
In lieu of giving other assets to the charity, there'd be more tax favorable to the family.
That's right. So I think that's a common thing. And, I'm always looking out for that. Of course, in more complicated planning, you know, with high net worth people, you know, in the many millions typically, they may have some sophisticated charitable trust giving that tends to try to optimize the gifting as well as saving taxes. I don't get too many of those clients.
I think I've seen really one in like the last 10 years. It's rare.
But I do get, you know, just...
Well, there's not a lot of people that are that charitably inclined, right. Typically.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, most of my client, you know, my clientele, if they're wanting to give to charity, it's not really tax-driven in their mind. It's just this is what they want to do. But for some people, like I said, particularly in the higher net worth arena, they're mindful of the tax aspects as well, and looking for ways to give but also to save taxes.
And then those charitable type remainder trusts that you kind of were referring to, that's the, I guess, formal name. I guess it is, unless they've changed it. You're putting a lump sum in the trust that's the charitable remainder trust, and what the income goes to the benefactor, the donor, and then the remainder goes to charity after they pass. Is that the general premise behind it?
Well, it's been so long since I've looked at them, I hesitate to say exactly. And I believe there's different ways they can be structured, but they're complicated. And if you're going down that road, you know, you're looking for planners that focus on that and make sure to set you up in the right type of trust.
I wonder if there's any like loopholes if you overlook that the IRS would just disregard it. I'm sure there's some nuances to it.
Yeah, when I've been in seminars and learning about those trusts, there's a lot of financial calculation going into that, and they're running numbers, and they've got sometimes special calculators to do those estimates and come up with the specific plans. It's a very specialized area when you get into
So it
that.
May not be as simple as just the income that's generated. There's more of a formula that goes into it.
Yeah, there are actually calculators designed to run models to prepare those types of trusts. And like I said, that's not really something I do, but there are planners out there that do that.
I don't know if I've ever heard, let's say someone's a two asset net worth, it's life insurance and an IRA. They want to give some money to charity. I think most planners would think, well, let's just give the life insurance, it's easier. But really, in that scenario, and the life insurance is inherited tax-free, IRA is going to be taxable. Would be better off to give a portion of that IRA to charity.
I'm always looking out for that, because sometimes people haven't thought about the tax aspect of it, and I'll say, hey, well, why don't you give the retirement account to the charity and let your children have these other funds? Because if you give the IRA to the children, they're going to have to pay tax on it.
Right.
So,
Like,
so it's just a little simple thing.
Real estate, usually stepped up basis, you know, and regular investment accounts, stepped up basis, no tax, but IRAs, 401ks, you're going to pay tax eventually.
It's like we were saying earlier, you know, it's nice to have those accounts, but they are the complicated ones to, you know, to plan with because of the taxes and the tax rules.
When you administer probate and things that pay out assets at death, is there any issues when someone has named a charity the beneficiary of an IRA? Is it just you cut the check to them and that's their money and you kind of that's the last you hear of it?
Yeah, that's the way I've. And the other thing nice from the estate planning and you know a probate or the administrative portion that when somebody dies is that if the charity is the beneficiary, then they can claim that directly and your executor or your trustee doesn't really have to do that. You know, they do that. That charity will claim that that beneficiary interest directly, you know, with the finance company that has the IRA. So,
then it kind of keeps the back and forth for the executor down. Right. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so.
That's a pretty good tip. I like that. Making charitable donations through a retirement account, that could be a consideration. Make sure you get the right advice on anything to do with wills, trusts, powers of attorney from the right type of expert. John Baker, estate planning attorney, BakerCounsel.com. John, I appreciate your expertise today.
Thanks, Jason. Always great to be here.
All right, stick around. I'll be back to wrap up the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison. And time keeps...
Would you like your business to be more efficient? Well-organized financial records are the foundation of any successful business. Take an advantage over your competition today by calling Tuthero Helen Welch CPAs at 848-1072. They can provide you with expert bookkeeping, payroll services, tax planning, and much, much more. Go to thwcpa.com or call them at 848-1072 today. Do you have a financial plan? I'm not talking about a worthless binder full of pretty charts and graphs. Are you certain you're on track to reach all your financial goals? A comprehensive financial plan is about so much more than just your IRA and mutual funds. It involves risk management, tax planning, professional investment management, retirement, and estate planning. Make sure your entire financial life is in order by calling me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner at 878-2134 or go to my website, Jason Qualls, CFP.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sun.
Welcome back to the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio. If you stuck around for the entire show, this is going to be a kind of a piggyback on the first segment talking about the 401k contributions. Let's see here. There's some components here that it doesn't kick in 2026, of course. More complexity. If you missed that part of the show, go back and podcast it. You can do that at Financial Coaching Radio. We talked about changes coming your way next year, year after, I don't know, in regards to 401k catch-up contributions. I say that jokingly. Of course, you can find out about it. I'd be happy to help you sort through it as well. Hit me up, Jason Qualls, CFP.com. This show is with you every Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock right here on WGNS. And, of course, you can listen online anytime at financialcoachingradio.com. We don't believe in the simplicity here, which I want things to be simple for you. It's just we don't need to make planning oversimplified. Your situation is unique. Your situation is, you know, not the same as everyone else's, so you need one-on-one individualized advice. And of course there's certain kind of rules of thumb that we gotta follow, but your investment strategy, your estate plan, your tax plan is going to look a little bit different than other folks, and that's the main thing. That's what real financial planning is. All right, I'm out of here for today. Appreciate you listening. I'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same channel. Keep it locked in right here on WGNS.